The path up to the cemetery was not paved, not really. It was a winding track of loose shale and stubborn weeds that Concetta had walked every All Souls' Day since she was a girl, back when the dead were fresh and the grief was loud enough to shake the cypress trees. Now, in the thick heat of late September, the path was a dry throat, cracked and thirsty. The sun hung directly overhead, a white coin burned out of the sky, offering no shade, only a relentless pressure against the back of her neck. Concetta adjusted the strap of her handbag and kept her eyes on her feet. She knew the terrain by memory, the sharp, jagged rock that could twist an ankle, the patch of time that crushed underfoot and released its scent when stepped on, the steep incline near the gate where the wind always caught her skirts. She wore a black dress of heavy wool, inappropriate for the season but required by the village custom, and the fabric stuck to her spine like a second skin. Her breath came in shallow sips. She was 43 years old, and her knees ached in the damp. She did not want to come. She had told Enzo she was going to visit Signora Bellini, a lie that tasted like copper in her mouth, familiar and sour. Enzo had nodded, chewing on the crust of his bread, his gray eyes fixed on the tablecloth. He did not ask questions. He rarely did anymore. Since the second letter, the one with the photograph of Andrea in Palermo, the one Enzo had thrown into the sea, Enzo had retreated into a silence so profound it felt like a physical presence in the house. He ate, he fished, he slept. He did not look at Concetta. He did not look at anything that reminded him of what he had destroyed. But Concetta needed to see him. Not the Andrea who had written the letters. That man was a ghost, a collection of ink and paper floating somewhere between Marseille and memory. She needed the stone. She needed the certainty of it. The letters were slippery things. They shifted. They lied. But a headstone was solid. It was carved by a stonemason who took money and delivered granite. It did not change its mind. It did not travel to Palermo. It stayed. The gate of Il Cimitero stood open, iron bars rusted into the shape of weeping willows. Inside, the air was cooler, smelling of cypress resin and dry earth, a scent so specific it made Concetta's teeth ache. The wind carried the distant sound of waves crashing against the cliffs below, a rhythmic thrumming that vibrated in the soles of her shoes. Rows of small chapels and flat markers stretched up the hill, white teeth in a black gumline. Some were crumbling, the names worn smooth by decades of salt wind. Others were pristine, maintained by sons who had returned from America with dollars in their pockets and distance in their hearts. Concetta walked slowly, her fingers brushing the tops of the lower walls. She passed the Conti plot, where old Signor Conti lay next to his wife, their dates close together, their grief synchronized. She passed the Bellini plot, where Signora Bellini's husband was buried, though Concetta knew, as everyone knew, that the body had never been found. Just a uniform, folded neatly, and a name on a slab of marble. That was the village way. You buried the absence. You gave the void a shape so the living could sit around it and mourn. And then she reached it. Marino, Andrea, 1918-1943. The stone was new, or as new as stone could be in a village that scraped for every lira. It was polished to a dull shine, reflecting the harsh noon light. Concetta stopped. She did not touch it immediately. She stood 3 paces away, looking at the name as though it were a stranger's face. Andrea. The letters called him that, Carissima Concetta. The Italian was simple, unadorned, the way he used to speak when they were alone in the kitchen after the children were asleep. No poetry, just facts. The rain has stopped. The bread is good. I miss the smell of your hair. But here, carved in granite, he was something else. He was a date. He was a fact. He was a man who had died in a trench in Italy, or on a ship in the Adriatic, or in a hospital bed in Marseille. Padre Salvetter had said it was a hospital bed. Pneumonia, quick and merciful, and he was gone. Concetta reached out. Her fingertips hovered over the A of Andrea. The stone was warm from the sun, almost hot. She pressed her palm against it. The heat transferred to her skin, seeping into the bones of her hand. It felt solid, real, undeniable. But her mind refused to accept it. Because if this stone was true, then the letters were lies. And if the letters were lies, then who had written them, and why? She shut her eyes against the glare. The scent of cypress resin, sharp, piney, almost medicinal, cut through the heavy, damp air that clung to La Posta, mingling with the faint, stale tobacco smoke that seemed to settle in the corners of the room. She reached for Andrea's face, pulling it from the shadows. Not the stiff, faded portrait kept in the drawer, nor the vibrant boy of 25 who had laughed too loudly at the August festival, but the man he had become in that final summer. The one who had packed his two leather trunks and canvas bag in absolute silence. The one who had looked at her with eyes clouded by fear, or perhaps anger, or perhaps a love so tangled it could not be named. She could not see his eyes. She remembered they were brown, like hers, but the image was blurred, like a photograph left too long in the sun. What remained was the sensation of his hand on her shoulder, heavy and warm, and the sound of his breathing in the dark. "He is here," she whispered. The words fell flat. They did not echo. The cemetery absorbed them, indifferent. Concetta opened her eyes. She looked at the dates again. 1918-1943, 25 years of life, 25 years. She had known him for 15 of them. 5 of courtship, 10 of marriage. 10 years was less than half a life. It was a blink. It was nothing. How could a man disappear into a grave in 10 years? How could he become a stone? She thought of the address in the first letter. Rue Paradis, number 14, third floor. She had walked past buildings like that in her dreams. Green doors, iron railings, the smell of cooking garlic and roasting peppers. Andrea had been alive there. He had eaten bread. He had drunk wine. He had looked out a window and watched the world turn without her. And he had written to her. Why? If he was dead, why write? If he was alive, why wait? Why let her mourn? Why let Enzo grieve? Why let the village wrap itself in black crepe and sing masses for a corpse that was walking the streets of Marseille? Concetta's hand trembled. She pressed harder against the stone, her nails digging into the polished surface. It hurt. Good. Pain was honest. Pain did not lie. Pain was a nerve-ending firing, a signal sent to the brain saying, "This is real, this is happening, you are here." The marble was cracked. A jagged fissure ran down the face, dark and deep. Padre Salvador's warning echoed in her mind, sharp as the stone's edge. She stepped back, the connection broke. The stone was just a stone again, cold despite the sun, silent. A shadow fell across the grave. Concetta turned. Padre Salvador stood at the foot of the plot, his black cassock contrasting sharply with the white limestone path. He was a tall man, thin as a reed, with a face that seemed perpetually apologetic. His white hair was swept back from his forehead, and his blue eyes were wide and watery, always looking at something just beyond your shoulder. "Concetta," he said. His voice was soft, melodic, the way he spoke to children or dying women. "I did not expect to see you here." "I came to pray," she said. She did not look at him. She looked at Andrea's name. "Prayer is a conversation," the priest said. He stepped closer, his sandals whispering on the gravel. "Are you speaking to him or to God?" Concetta turned to face him fully. "I am speaking to the truth." Padre Salvador smiled, a thin stretching of lips that did not reach his eyes. "The truth is a difficult companion, Concetta. Sometimes it is kinder to let the stone speak for us. It says what we need it to say. He is at peace. He is with the Lord. We are proud." "And if the stone is lying?" she asked. The priest's smile faltered, just for a second, a flicker of something hard behind the watery blue. "The stone does not lie. The stone is faith. It is our agreement with the unknown. Without it, we are just wandering." The priest's expression tightened. For a heartbeat only, something cold hardened behind the watery blue of his eyes. He glanced toward the cliff edge, then back at her. "That stone was paid for with 3 months of Enzo's catch, 3 months of fish traded for granite. You pull at it, Concetta, you pull at him. You pull at every man in this village who gave something to the sea and got a name in return." "To uncertainty," he said, "to chaos, to the sea." He gestured toward the cliff edge, visible through the gaps in the cypress trees. The water below was a deep, bruised purple, churning against the rocks. "You think I do not know what you are doing?" Padre Salvador said. His voice dropped, losing its melody, becoming flat and dry. "You think I do not see how your eyes linger on the post office, how you freeze when the mail truck rumbles up the lane? You are digging, Concetta. You are digging up what God has buried. And it is not piety. It is vanity." Concetta felt a chill crawl up her spine, unrelated to the wind. "I am a widow," she said. "I am allowed to ask questions." "You are allowed to mourn," he corrected. "There is a difference. Mourning is for the living, digging is for the dead, and the dead do not wish to be disturbed." "You are allowed to mourn," he corrected. his voice tightened, the melody fraying at the edges. But you are not allowed to undo it. Every time you pry at that grave, you stir something that's settled, something that chose its rest. You think you're the only one who hears them calling. Silence is not the problem, Kinsetta said. Her voice was steady, surprising herself. The noise is. Padre Salvador stared at her. For a moment, she thought he might reach out and touch her arm, his hand hovering with the same ritualistic gentleness he used on penitence, offering absolution like a candy. But he did not. He straightened his cassock, adjusted his collar, and looked away. Go home, Kinsetta, he said. Lock your door, sort your mail, do your duty, and let Andrea rest. He turned and walked away, his black robe flowing behind him like a shadow detaching from the ground. Kinsetta watched him go. She watched him descend the hill, smaller and smaller, until he disappeared behind the wall of the chapel. She was alone again. Kinsetta looked back at the headstone. The sun had moved slightly, shifting the angle of the light. The name Andrea was now in shadow, the letters dark and hollow. She reached out and touched the A again. This time, she did not press. She traced the groove of the carving, her finger following the curve of the letter, the depth of the cut. The stonemason had worked carefully. He had taken his time. He had charged for every inch. And yet, as her finger moved along the edge of the A, she felt something wrong. A roughness. A chip, not part of the design. A flaw. She leaned closer. The chip was small, no bigger than a fingernail, located at the base of the letter. It looked fresh. Or perhaps it looked fresh because she was seeing it for the first time. She ran her thumb over it. It was sharp. It could draw blood. Kinsetta pulled her hand back. She looked at her thumb. There was no blood, but the sensation remained a prickling, a warning. She looked up at the sky. The white coin was still there, burning, indifferent. The wind picked up, carrying the scent of thyme and salt and something else, something metallic, like the taste of a battery on the tongue. She thought of the second letter, the photograph. Andrea Older standing in a plaza in Palermo, smiling at someone off camera. He looked happy. He looked alive. And he was lying in the ground. Or he was not. Kinsetta stepped back from the grave. She did not pray. She did not make the sign of the cross. She turned and began the walk down the hill, her knees aching, her hand still tingling where the stone had burned her. The path was the same. The shale was the same. The thyme crushed underfoot. But the world felt different. Lighter, somehow, unmoored. As if the gravity that held everything in place, the duty, the grief, the silence had loosened its grip. She walked faster. She wanted to be home. She wanted to lock the door. She wanted to take the letters out of the drawer and spread them on the sorting table and compare the handwriting, the ink, the dates. She wanted to know. And she knew, with a certainty that frightened her, that she would not stop. Not until she knew. Not until the stone spoke, or the paper screamed, or the sea gave up its dead. She reached the gate. She pushed through the iron willows. The sun hit her face, blinding. She did not squint. She walked down the road, past the houses with their closed shutters and their quiet courtyards, past the fountain where the women still gathered to wash clothes, their voices rising and falling like the tide. No one looked at her. No one knew. Let them not know. Kinsetta kept her eyes forward. She thought of Andrea. She thought of Marseille. She thought of the date, which was impossible, which was impossible, which was impossible. The heavy wooden door of Casa Marino yielded to her push, releasing the familiar scent of dried oregano that washed over her before she stepped into the quiet dark.